Breeze y McDonald's tienen la clave para un post-game meal de campeones. Una QPC con salsa barbecue y tocino, papitas y un refresco. Los pros le llaman el Angel Breeze Special. Llévate el Angel Breeze Special solo en McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.
Hey, welcome to Fitzdog Radio. Very excited about my guest today, Mr. Kevin Nealon, hot off the 50th anniversary of SNL, where he was ranked number 9 or 8 as the greatest anchors of all time. I think he was also like the longest running cast member at the time when he left the show. So anyway, we had a nice talk this past week. I was honored, as always, that he would come in. He's a good friend, and he says he doesn't do any podcasts except for mine and Conan O'Brien's, and he gets asked constantly. I don't know why people do mine. Nobody listens. They just like me. They like hanging out with me. I take that as a real compliment. Anyway, welcome. What am I doing? On hold today for a long time with Blue Shield of California. I don't know why. Why are we on hold? Let's talk about the idea of corporations that know that a lot of people are going to call that day, having just few enough operators that you are always consistently on hold for 10 to 20 minutes. Does it make sense when they're hiring people that are in the third world that they're paying $2 for the day? Can they not pay the extra $2? I'm literally like, I'm at the point now where as soon as I get through to the recording, I just start hitting zero and saying agent, 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 agent. And they must know that if somebody says agent enough times that they are on the edge of a nervous breakdown and they need to let you through or there's going to be violence. And I think maybe Luigi killing that guy is putting a little bounce in their step. Maybe they're going to pick up after 72 agents instead of 79 times of you saying agents. Who knows? But it's just amazing because and then they want you to hit buttons. They don't want to give you a hit 3 if there's an error on your bill. No. If I want to pay for something, let me pay for it. You're already fucking me over. Now I want to give you money, and now you're wasting 20 minutes of my time hitting buttons. That's how I say it. Yeah. So anyway, more about corporate America to come. I'm very upset about it lately. And I just don't understand how America doesn't see that this is the problem. It's not the politicians. It's the corporations that are electing the politicians. Now, Trump is getting rid of this agency that basically helps consumer. It's a consumer protection agency that they are cheering as he fires middle management job, like average workers, fucking good jobs. Why are we cheering him getting rid of good jobs that are looking after consumers that are suing corporations for getting fucked over on health insurance, etc., credit card companies, loan companies? I don't know. I don't know what's going on with this country. It's fucking crazy. Anyway, saw a lot of bad comedy recently. I was at a club and I was watching some comics. Here's the thing about stand-up comedy. To be a comedian, you should be fucked up. You should be a broken toy. That was always the criteria before. There should be no other option for you in the workplace besides being a stand-up comic. You should be dyslexic. You should have been addicted to something. If you were not arrested, you should not be on a stage. Why should 200 people be quiet for 15 minutes or 20 minutes for you to talk when you basically have done nothing? You grew up in the suburbs. Your parents paid for college. You took a comedy class. you built up social media by doing it the way every other social media influencer did, and now you're writing jokes about, I don't know what, your parents are paying your rent. What the fuck do you have to talk about? Earn it. Have you ever traveled alone? Have you ever fought? Have you ever had a fist fight with a stranger? Have you ever cheered up a friend who got beat up by their parents by making them laugh? Were you the one on the playground that everybody crowded around because you were so funny? No? Then what the fuck are you doing on a comedy club stage? There's so much mediocre comedy and they're watering down, whatever, I sound like a bitter old guy, but I'm not. I was a fucking drunk. Got in fights. Spent a couple weekends in jail. I have ADHD. I'm bald. I was always in trouble. Parents beat me. I get to be a comedian. All right, this is a waste of time. People tuned in because Kevin Nealon is on the show. Before we get to him, I want to remind you about some upcoming tour dates. Atlanta Punchline, March 6th through the 8th. Hollywood Improv for the St. Patrick's Day show on March 15th. Hamilton, Ontario, March 26th. Toronto, March 27th. We got Pittsburgh, Boston, Escondido, Tampa, La Jolla. All tickets available at fitzdog.com. And now my guest is a Primetime Emmy Award nominee, Screen Actors Guild winner, Saturday Night Live from 86 to 95. He was on Weeds on Showtime. He was on Happy Gilmore, The Wedding Singer, Anger Management, Little Nicky, Daddy Daycare, Grandma's Boy, You Don't Mess with Zohan. I mean, Larry Sanders Show. This guy is a fucking legend. He's so talented. He's got this great book out called I Exaggerate, where he does caricatures of some of your favorite people. And he's got a podcast called Hiking with Kevin that you can watch every, I don't know if it's every week, maybe it's every other week, but a lot of back episodes to watch that are amazing. So again, I'm honored he's here. Here's my talk with the great Kevin Nealon. Welcome to Fitz Dog Radio. Kevin Nealon, you've been on the show
a thousand times.
I'd say probably 10 times.
Too many.
It's not too many. You walked in the door with this attitude.
No. I'm saying 10 times in the last month I've been here. I should have an attitude about that, right?
But you came in and you said you'll never do it again. And that makes me feel like I either want to do a great one with you right now or just really mail it in.
You should always do a great one. And I said I'll never do it again after the first time.
No, you didn't.
You just don't remember. Play it back. Go get the old VHS.
Let's play it back.
See, right there.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. But you haven't done other podcasts, you said, in a long time.
Nope.
Just Conan.
Yeah. And I can't do it.
Yeah.
It just...
gobbles up your day.
It doesn't do anything for me.
No.
Nobody watches podcasts.
Nobody does. No. It only decided the last election.
I do it to... Because I feel like I'm helping my friends a little bit. Because I know what it's like. Because I have this little hiking show called Hiking with Kevin on YouTube. And it's hard to get people.
Yeah.
You know, at my age that aren't in wheelchairs.
Well, especially if they're trying to hike. Have you had anybody in a wheelchair go on Hiking with Kevin?
Let's see. Well, that was cane. Crutches. No. No wheelchairs yet.
There's a guy who has cerebral palsy that I saw in Austin who's one of the funniest comics I've seen in years. I wish I could remember his name right now. But the crowd does give you a little extra when you go up with something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And so I've often thought maybe I should fake I'm blind, but then I can't do crowd work.
People know who you are anyway. It's hard to get away with that.
I could have a stroke.
That's not. How about a brain aneurysm?
That's good.
And have it right there on the stage.
And make sure it's being videotaped.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be viral. Or what if I got a virus on stage? That would be viral.
This has nothing to do with that, but I was at the Ice House about 6 months ago, and I'm stage, and I hear this, ah! off to the side. I thought, this guy's trying to distract me. I'm going to walk over to this side of the stage. And then someone in the audience goes, he's choking. He's choking. I turn around the guy, and they're all around him. And I've never done this before. I've known the Heimlich maneuver for years, but I've never done it.
Yeah.
I've always waited to see somebody else is going to do it. And I, because I don't want to be around someone when they're about to die, maybe. You know? So I don't know. For some reason, I just jumped into action. I jumped off the stage, and I got behind him. And there's one person each side, and he weighs like, he's not even that big, but he weighs a lot.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get him up. I go, lift up the each side, lift up. And they're lifting him up. And I'm about to do it, and he comes around. And come to find out, he wasn't choking. And the woman in the audience also goes, give him the Heimlich maneuver. He wasn't choking. He was taking a lot of medicine because he had stomach cancer. I found out later. If I did that to his stomach, it probably would have spread throughout his whole body. I just listened to the lady. He's choking. She's way in the back. She doesn't even know.
Is that how cancer works? If you push on it, it spreads?
I don't know.
So, like, if someone has breast cancer, don't hug them tight because you might spread it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not.
How did you figure that? Was the guy like, stop, trying
he
to
get. He
was
give like, me- he was out. And then he came around and they said he was breathing. I said, what do you mean he's breathing? I know the Heimlich went over. This is the chance I get to use it. I did see someone do the Heimlich maneuver once in Hawaii. You know, I just got there, was sitting out on the deck, you know, it's really nice and having breakfast. And all of a sudden, this guy, like maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 yards away, kind of outside more, starts, he's holding his, you know, I thought, this guy's, I think he's having a heart attack, this guy. And then another guy, I'm about to get up to go over there. And thank God somebody else came behind him and started doing the Heimlich. And it's really, it's violent. You have to really pick them up off the ground almost. Yeah. And this piece of meat come flying across.
Really? Like,
yeah, this is the second time I've seen the Heimlich performed.
No shit.
First one's always the best. You know what I mean?
I feel like it, yeah, because after that, it just becomes like, you know, who can shoot it further? They get competitive.
Right. Yeah.
I would save the piece of meat if I was that guy.
No, the guy went over there and he ate it because it's expensive. That's expensive food in Hawaii.
It is, yeah. Congratulations. You were just nominated by Steve Martin as the number 9 Weekend Update person of all time.
I think you're wrong about that.
No, I'm not.
I will bet you $1 million.
8, 10, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Nope. It wasn't Steve Martin. It was Bill Murray.
Oh!
Take a break. We'll be right back. You know, I
you know, you really.
It's like a nightmare. They do something like that, and for the rest of my life, you were number 9.
Yeah.
I hate those lists where they rank them. Who's ranking them?
Right. Well, people Bill Murray is.
Well, when they do the Rolling Stones, you know, 100 best sketches on SNL, it's people that weren't alive when I was doing my sketches. You know, they're like 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds, and they're ranking, you know, the cast from, you know, Will Ferrell or who was on right after me.
Right. Well, I think that Hans and Franz generally makes it in those lists.
Did not make it.
No.
No, that's what I heard.
What?
Yeah. Mr. Subliminal? What?
Yeah.
A lot of good things. But, you know, they had the best commercials on over the years the other night. And there wasn't the Change Bank, which I think is the best commercial ever. With
how
Jim
did
Downey.
It go?
Huh? The Change Bank? Oh, Jim Downey's hosting. It says it's a commercial for the Change Bank saying, if you come to us with $20, we could give you change for that. We can give you a 10 and 2 fives, or we can give you 4 fives. We could even give you $15 and then $5 in quarters because we're the Change Bank. And it's very serious, you know, like a very important, you know, bank. And then I would come in and say, so you're saying that if I brought in $100, I could get 100 single bills? We would give you 100 single bills for that $100. It was the greatest commercial ever.
Yeah, didn't make it.
I don't think it made it. I didn't see it on the show. Yes,
you got a lot of love, though. I feel like your face popped up a bunch of times.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, were you there?
I was in the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see that you came up a lot?
No.
You feel like you didn't?
You mean at the music event?
No, not the music event.
At the regular, you mean yeah. in the audience?
No, just like sketches that you ran.
Yeah, like the Love Toilet.
Yeah,
the Love Toilet and a quick weekend update.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's kind of like that puts a seal on it now. It's done.
Right.
You know, you know, it was a big part of my life back then, and it always has been. And it's funny, you know, when you're on that show, you're constantly looking for Lorne Michaels' approval.
Yeah.
With sketches and, you know, your work ethic and stuff. And 30 years later, I'm still looking for it. Even like when I'm in the grocery store, I'm pulling a carton of milk off. I go, I wonder if Lauren would approve of this milk or the way I'm, maybe I should do chocolate milk.
You know. Wow, that sounds like PTSD you need to work through.
It is. I mean, even thinking about sketches to write.
Yeah.
You know, because it was such an opportunity and an experience
yeah.
to be on that stage, to be live. I remember before I went on my first sketch, Mr. Subliminal, Lauren comes up to me 10 seconds away in commercial. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, are you sure this is what you want?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a documentary that I just saw where it kind of portrayed him as being a guy who plays a lot of mental games with people. And that, you know, to the effect that he brings out the best in them, but he does it through positive and negative reinforcement.
Yeah. 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 No,
he's like a conductor.
I mean, I think he... not intentionally, but I think he's confused a lot of people.
Yeah.
That have gone there to try to figure out what to do
right.
know, with their tenure there.
Yeah. So you said once that you really always considered yourself a stand-up and not a sketch writer, like that you didn't really ever feel like you were a good sketch writer.
I think it was more of a sketch player, you know, because I wasn't like broad. I wasn't doing these broad church lady characters or
right.
the cheerleaders. So mine, you know, Hans and Franz was the only one I think I've ever done that was broad like that. So, but I always thought in terms of stand-up, you know, punchline, setup, punchline.
Yep.
You know that? Attitude. And then all of a sudden I have to write sketches for SNL. I don't know anything about writing a sketch. I didn't know that they're not supposed to have an ending, right? I wrote a sketch with an ending once, and they go, oh, I see. So this happens from that happening.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You mean they don't want a hard ending?
No.
No.
At least back then they didn't.
Yeah. They want a funny beat, and then another beat, another
yeah.
beat.
Whatever it is, and then just go out, whatever.
Yeah.
But I guess sketches had endings, but yeah, I guess it was too obvious of an ending
yeah.
that I wrote. But I like I liked writing, but...
Who did you partner up with when you wrote?
Me.
You didn't write with anybody else?
Not too much. The first sketch I wrote with Al Franken, Mr. Subliminal.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, you kind of partner up. Like Jim Downey was the head writer. You kind of go and knock on his office and say, hey, I got this and that. What do you think? Well, maybe if you did that and that. But right. it's not like staying up till 2 a.m. writing with somebody. Dana really is the only person I wrote with, like the Hans and Franz stuff.
Yeah.
And we used to jam on ideas before either one of us was on SNL. We shared a house in the Hollywood Hills.
Uh-huh.
And we would be out in the driveway just talking about, you know, different ideas for things. You know, like there were the two porn guys, you know, we're getting made up, we're uh-huh. the makeup chairs, uh-huh. and we're and we're getting made up, we're getting what do you call it, fluff down there or whatever they call it. You would know.
So I'm anyway, fluffing right now.
Yeah, fluffing. And we, Dana and I, would just be having a regular conversation. You know, occasionally talk to the makeup artist. So Nick, are you going to that party tomorrow? That's right, Sally. Give it a little pinstripes on the side, make it nice for the people. Because I went to that party last week, and I didn't. Yeah, a little powder down around the balls would be nice. Yeah, just for the people. Everything was for the people.
That's hilarious. I remember the porn bit you used to do where you said. I was watching a porn movie the other day, and the beginning, what is
yeah,
it? I was
interested,
good.
Interested. Suddenly no interest.
And then interested again.
Interested again. Interested again. It's a long bit.
Yeah.
It's a long bit.
Yeah.
But even Dana and I used to do the Beatle anthology, the naughty anthology. You know,
one time I remember I was sitting on George's face, and I took a big old plumpy poop on his face, and that's when we wrote Strawberry Fields Forever. Yeah, it was always that.
So, you know, I had some characters going in there, but I don't, my audition, I think I just did, you know, something for my stand-up act.
Yeah. So you didn't do Subliminal Man before SNL?
I did something called Tagging.
Yeah, I remember seeing that like at the Comedy Cellar years ago.
Yeah, where I would just insert a word really quickly.
Right, right, right.
But it wasn't to get something from somebody, which it wasn't a SNL Mets tickets. You know what I mean? Just throw that in there.
Right.
You know, we'll go out to a restaurant later, your treat, and, you know, I'll pick up the check.
Yeah.
God, you have the whitest teeth.
Yeah. I use, you know, put the wraps on.
Oh, you had them bleached?
Yeah.
Oh. That's also good for COVID, I think, bleach.
I think it is.
Yeah. And did you have that gap closed in a little bit?
No.
It's the same width?
Yeah. Has it seemed less wide than before?
You know, Ron Howard's is a little bit wider, so maybe I'm confusing
Paul
him.
Scheer has a wide one.
Paul Scheer.
Letterman has a wide one.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Does he?
He might have filled it in.
I saw his son's penis last night.
Really?
He's in the new season of White Lotus.
Is it built up?
As Arnold saw it, and he said, it was at the premiere, and he comes out, and he goes, I saw my son's penis. The apple does not fall far from the tree.
The cherry does not fall far from the tree. Hey, so you watched it last night? Don't tell me about it, because I want to see it. But Arnold Schwarzenegger's son is an actor?
Yes. And I saw he was at a party once. I do work with this group called Best Buddies. They help people that have intellectual disabilities. So we were up.
Am I in that class?
You're being considered.
Oh.
Yeah. If you could send a tape. If you could send in a tape. So we're up at the Getty Center, and there's this big cocktail party. And this is probably 5 years ago. So my daughter was like 15, and he was probably 18, and he flirted with my daughter, and she kind of fell for him. And then
talking about Schwarzenegger or the son?
Schwarzenegger? No. My daughter does not clean houses.
Oh, my God. That was so racist.
That's funny, the passive-aggressively racist guy. Because, this guy fucking robbed my car. That's racist.
Yeah, you can't talk about people that rob your car because maybe it wasn't a person. You know, you're going to badmouth people like that? No.
So he was another show before, but, you know.
Is he the bodybuilder guy, his kid? Or is he the one from The Housekeeper?
No, the Housekeeper is the bodybuilder.
Right, so it's not him.
No, it's Patrick, who is Maria Shriver.
Oh, yeah,
and
he went to my
son's
school ahead of it. Yeah, he used to date Taylor Swift, I think. Yes, he did.
Really?
Oh, no, maybe I'm thinking of the Kennedy kid. No, no, he dated somebody.
Yeah?
Oh.
Could somebody look that up? Patrick Schwarzenegger. But yeah, he does a good job. He's not great. I mean, it's tough because, you know, you grow up in a world where you generally go into whatever your father did or your mother did. That's what you end up doing, you know?
Yeah.
Just because you've seen it done and you're, you know, you want to be like your dad. Yeah. But then if you go into acting, they call you a Nepo baby. But what are you supposed to do? Just not do it?
I think a Nepo baby is somebody who gets help from their family.
Yeah.
But maybe it's already instantaneous help because people know that you're related to him, so that gives you a foot up.
Yeah. Your son is what, 17 now?
18.
18? Yeah. Does he have any interest in going in the entertainment field?
Dude, he's on SNL right now.
Stop it.
He's part of the cast.
Stop it.
No, he's he doesn't really. No, he wants to be in some form of entertainment, but not in front of the camera.
Yeah.
He wants to do, and he's not even really sure what he used to want to be a director, but then he did this course at Northwestern University during the summer for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Where he directed, and then afterwards he goes, I'm not sure I want to be a director. So he might want to get into the business end of it, but he's not like, he doesn't want to be like me, although he's an incredible mimic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he picks up these little nuances from everybody and he'll do it. I go, oh my God, that's like spot on right there.
Really?
Yeah, like a Jim Carrey kind of a thing,
uh-huh.
Only not as broad.
Yeah. So, well, don't worry about that. My kids are 21 and 24 and they still can't figure out what they want to do. And I realize nobody does anymore. Kids don't really make that choice till later. People get married later. They have kids later. They die later. So I kind of am giving my kids their early 20s to just try shit. My daughter came in here for a while and she was helping out on the production side.
Oh.
And she couldn't stand the people she was working for. So she hasn't been back.
Yeah. No, I was always a slow mover. you know.
Yeah.
I lost my virginity at 20, and then I lost a little more of it in San Francisco at 21, and then a whole bunch of it in San Francisco. Oh, my God. I still got a little left just for that right person. You know what I'm saying, Fitzy?
That's good.
How much is the water?
We validate your parking as well. Okay. Oh, and I bought you a Fitzdog Radio coffee cup. Have I ever given one to you before?
I will add that to my collection.
Okay.
I've got every talk show coffee cup in the world since, I don't know, since the Tonight Show.
You just did Good Morning America last week. Did you get a cup?
No. No.
So when you just said, I've got one from every talk show.
That's not a talk show. That's a morning show. I'll accept your apology. You got two things wrong so far.
What was the other thing?
The number nine, Steve Martin.
Oh, right. I've got all these notes.
You know what's the worst, Fitzy, is when something like that is on TV, people will text you, go, hey, man, that's BS. That, you know, Bill Murray did that.
You
shouldn't have done that.
Right,
you know,
right.
I made me sad. I said, well, it didn't make me sad. What are you trying to make me sad?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You weren't, your sketches weren't in, your characters weren't in the top 50 in Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
It bothers you more than it bothers
me. Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
I never expected to be on that show.
You were the longest running cast member in history at the time.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
And now people have been on it for like, you know, 20 years or
whatever. Well, Keenan has been on it for...
Keenan.
Every time, and I keep hearing he's retired, and then you turn it on next season and he's back. I'll tell you what, the show had a really good resurgence. There was a time after you guys left, after, you know, Sandler and everybody left, that I felt like it really took a dive.
Yeah.
And then the women brought it back, I feel like, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, and there was a bunch of women that brought it back. And now I feel like there's a young cast now that's doing it in a way that is different. It's definitely more like clippable for the internet. It's more, I think, relatable to younger people. I think they're smart. They're not trying to, they're still trying to bring in young people.
Yeah. I was there the other night and I'm looking at this cast member and think, they could be my grandchildren.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But yet here I am still, you know, ambitious and trying to, you know, oh, I'm better than him, or whatever.
Right.
So it's funny that way. It's just generational. It keeps moving along, and you keep staying on your wave, and you keep enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah.
And don't try to be, you know, the king of comedy right now.
Right.
Because, you know, it's too late.
Well, the thing is about you, like, you've done it your own way. You've done stand-up, you've done acting, and you've got your podcast, and I feel like... I never feel like you're chasing anything. I feel like you attract things to you. You know, you do a lot of films with... Are Sandler's called films or movies?
I believe they are called films.
They are?
Yeah. Now, Some people do call them movies, though.
I feel like the difference between film and movie is the difference between comic and comedian. Like, I feel like comedian is to film what... comic is to movie. Like, it's more broad, it's not as respected, but it's generally more accessible. And
well, let me ask you this. What is the difference between a legend and legendary? Legend and legendary.
I would say you and John Lovitz.
Legend?
You're the legend.
Or legendary is you could be a legend? You have those qualities?
It's like legend-ish.
Sort of legendary.
Yeah.
I guess you'll never know if you're a legend or legendary until you die, and then you won't know.
Right.
But it's just about maybe remembering somebody for what they did.
Yeah.
But, you know, after a certain point, people forget.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, I've talked to people. I remember Louis C.K. telling me about doing his specials, and he used the word legacy. He talked about his legacy, and I thought, what a crazy thing to be thinking about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and good for him. It's just, it's a different way of looking at your career. Like, to me, I think I'm similar to you in the sense that I get a gig in Cincinnati for the week. I am all in on the gig in Cincinnati that
you,
week.
Nobody is more all in than you are for a gig. I see you post things. Mm-hmm. I see you, when I come to this gig after you, it's like, oh my God, that Fitzsimmons, man, he's really, really hungry and desperate.
It's the microphone is still sweaty when he left.
Yeah, no, but you do. You give it your all. I noticed that. You don't phone it in, and I applaud you for that.
Well, I thank you. I watch you, and I see that you go. You know, you're on the road a lot. I'll read your schedule later, but I mean, you hit the road hard, and then when you're in town, do you live down south or do you live in?
No, I live near UCLA.
Okay, yeah. And then you'll drive out to Pasadena to do a show for $50.
No.
Oh, really? 200?
Did you get 50?
I get 50.
Yeah, I got 50. Don't compare.
That's why I don't go out there anymore. I don't know if it was 50. Maybe it was more. But you go out, you do my podcast. You don't need to do this. You don't need to do those spots. But you go out and like you still are as much in it as you've ever been.
Well, I love stand up. It's all the only reason I got into this was stand up. I love, you know, watching Albert Brooks and Steve Martin and Richard Pryor. And that's all I had my sights on. And then, you know, when you're in Hollywood for a while, you're doing these clubs and casting people come in and all of a sudden you're in an acting class in L.A., and, you know, a lot of them, one after another, learning how to work in front of a camera or do a cold reading.
Yeah.
But I always wanted stand-up. So I love it. I never stopped doing it except for the pandemic, like a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two parking lot stuff, but
it's
just in our blood.
Yep. I can't stop. And, you know, I do think about retiring at some point, but I think
what
I would
have... What is that? What's retiring?
Well, here's the thing. You think you're retired, and then someone goes... Hey, you want to do a cruise ship to the Bahamas? Yeah, I'm 78, but fuck it. Free trip? Yeah, I'll do it.
Babes?
And then,
babes.
And then... look at the wrinkles on her. They're really tight.
That's cellulite, man. That's looking pretty creamy, man.
I still got a little bit of my virginity left.
I got some Caribbean virginity. You're just waiting to get out there, baby.
I'll rub some lotion on that.
Now you get me worked up.
Jesus.
But I don't think I'll ever retire. I mean, I can never retire. I can't, like, you know, people say this is my last tour.
Yeah.
I'm retiring. They never do.
They never do.
Bands especially.
Jeff Garland has retired like 3 times.
He has.
Didn't come back. Yeah.
He was never good at anything.
So. Yeah, you can't retire unless people are going to notice.
No, he's funny, dude.
No, Garland's very funny.
No, he's funny.
Who do you like that's like more recent with stand-ups?
I do like Shane Gillis.
Oh, yeah, Shane Gillis is great.
Yeah, my son loves him. So yeah. I've watched his special a few times to see why he likes him, and I'm starting to get it. But I've always liked Tig Notaro.
Yeah, Tig's great.
His sheer style is just so funny. And
so unexpected.
Oh, so unexpected, and... You know, she's not trying to be in your face. She's not trying to get that energy. And I listened to a tape of mine when I first started, and I was much more laid back, you know. And then over the years, I think I learned that I have to be a little more energetic to grab the audience.
Uh-huh.
And it's a real big difference. It's almost like playing an audible book at regular speed and then 2 times the speed right now. But, you know, people's voices also change. Like Howard Stern.
Yeah.
20 years ago. Hey. He was like, Rick, hey, how you doing? So where did you do that? And now it's like, so I saw you in this movie, you know.
Yeah.
It's much more laid back and calmer.
I think that he uses filters on the microphone because his voice is so much deeper now. I guess it also ages. I think your voice ages as you get older. But I find that it's weird because I try to bring my energy up. And the thing about doing stand-up comedy, as you know, is there are thousands of decisions and adjustments that are made, even in a 15-minute set, in terms of how fast you're talking, what volume you're at, how much you're moving, who are you looking at in the crowd. Like, there's all these adjustments, and the longer you do it and the more often you do it, and I think that's the key to why you still go out in town, is it really is like going to the gym. And when you're at the gym a lot, you notice the details of what you're doing.
Yeah. And also, this is something I never am able to do. It's torture, is to watch a tape of me doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah,
just
tough.
Recently, I realized how important that is, though.
Yeah.
Because you see how you move on stage. Mm-hmm. You see how you hold the mic. You see how you could embellish jokes or add on to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see what not to do. You know, even what you're wearing. You go, I should wear brighter colors or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important. And I've been doing that lately. And also because you want to post something, you know, the whole clip thing now.
Yeah.
Crowd work. So you have to sit through it unless you, you know, pay somebody to do that.
Are you videotaping sets and cutting them up, putting them up? Really?
A lot of clubs have videos.
Oh,
now.
Wait, I've seen. Yeah, I've seen you at the, I guess up at the Ice House. They must. Do they record themselves and give it to you?
Yeah,
it
you
looks
can
great.
See me, you can see me doing the Heimlich maneuver up there.
Dude, that would have been your greatest.
That's crowd work.
That would have been your greatest viral clip of all time.
Crowd work.
Giving Heimlich to a cancer victim. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it's hard for me to watch myself.
Mm.
And
imagine being a porn star. Do you think they watch themselves?
That's a good question.
Like I could have arched my back a little bit more, too much eye contact. You know, don't be so surprised when the guy shows up. It's just his friend.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
A porn guy who can't watch himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the package. You know, you have to do it all. I just can't do everything that, you know, some of these comics are doing, that they do everything they can. Nikki Glaser's great at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just relentless.
You mean how hard you work to promote and...
Promote and post things and have stories.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, be on talk shows and all that stuff. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. It's a lot of work and it detracts from... You know, you've been a dad for the last 18 years. And, you know, there's choices you have to make at a certain point when you get home of like, I can sit with my son and play guitar or just talk, or I can sit in the other room and cut up a video and look at myself and then post it and tag it. And then you're suddenly obsessed with checking how many likes it's getting.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to reply to people. And it's like, well, what's the payoff here? You know? If I get bigger, I'm just going to have to keep... Because that shit has no momentum. If you don't keep feeding that machine, then it just comes straight back down again.
Yeah. It's just sad that you have to rely on how many followers you have.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus didn't worry about that.
Yes, he did. He was all about his followers.
But he didn't keep track. Oh, I lost a Roman yesterday, you know, because of something I said.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like Hollywood. You really want the Jews following you, like Jesus.
Yeah, but it's just sad when you have to do that. And I'm the same as you. I said, I'd rather not have the followers. You know, it's not like I'm going to fill arenas because I have like 2 million followers now.
Yeah.
You know?
But you do theaters. You do clubs and theaters.
Yeah, once in a while. Yeah, I do both.
Yeah.
Corporate stuff.
You do corporate stuff.
Yeah. That's what you got to do.
I'm too dirty.
Do you know, I was with Alec Baldwin once, and he was going, talking about acting and stuff. He goes, and directors go, oh, you know who you should work with? You know, Scorsese. You know, whatever the director's name was. Like, yeah, you mean I have a choice of who I want to work with?
Oh, so you were shitting me by saying it's not even possible for me to do corporate dates.
No. You could do a corporate date.
I'm too dirty.
What, don't you have, can you just stop saying the F word?
Not really.
Why do you have to resort to filth?
It's not just the cursing. It's also I talk about sex. I talk about religion. I talk about politics a little bit.
Why don't you talk about things that really matter?
So if you do a corporate date, you have to do an hour squeaky clean.
Not an hour, like 45 minutes, 50 minutes.
And how much do you make for something like that?
It depends on the corporation.
Yeah. Say it's a big one.
Well, I filled in for somebody a couple of weeks ago. It was in Vegas.
Yeah.
And I made a lot of money, more than I've ever made before for a stand-up gig.
Six figures?
Not that much.
Five figures?
40,000.
40,000?
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Times five.
Plus, don't they fly you first class and
first
put you in a nice
class,
hotel?
You got a nice suite.
Yeah.
And you're there alone.
Yeah.
And you're walking around going, man, I wish I was 25, man. I have a party up here.
Right.
You know, you get the bar.
I know. It feels like a waste when you're in a room like that.
Dude, one time I was doing a gig in San Diego at a comedy club there.
Yeah.
And they put you up across the street in a hotel. And this is in the Gaslight District, so it gets loud at night, a lot of partying. And I go, they bring me to my suite. I swear to God, it's a king size bunk bed that's held up by chains, big black chains. And at the end of it is a stripper's pole. I swear to God.
And you're in your 60s going like, I don't know what to do.
I'm there alone.
Yeah.
I wish I had somebody with me. But yeah, that's the, what is the worst hotel you've been in experience?
Well, when I used to do college shows when I was in my 20s, I used to go out. I hosted a show on MTV. And so I used to get a lot of college dates where I would book like 10 shows in 7 days, where I'd do noon show in one school, nighttime show at the next school, and they would route me. And they were never hotels. They were motels.
Yeah.
And they were the kind of motels where...
Motel 4s at the time?
Motel 6.
Oh, went up, yeah, went up to 6 over the period.
Oh, you were at the 4s?
Yeah, back then. It
was yeah.
Back then.
No, 6 was considerably better than the 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the cars would be backed up to your room because your room faced the parking lot. And then they'd start their cars and the exhaust would come under your door into the room. And I remember once they gave me the remote control for the TV had a block of wood chained to it.
Oh, my God.
And it had a fly swatter on the TV.
No.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when I was doing gigs early on. This is before there was like cable channels, and it was a cable that went into the TV, but the porn channels were scrambled. And so a comedian taught me, if you take a key and you stick it in this round thing on the cable, you can take it off and then you remove this. There was like a little washer and you put it back on and it would unscramble the porn channels, and it worked for years.
Wow. I've heard about all kinds of things for people to have sex, but I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. You and I have been around for a while.
Yeah.
Do you talk about getting older on stage?
I always find it funny when a comedian goes, I'm getting older. It's like, well, we literally are all getting older. That's not a premise.
I heard Nate Bargatze talk, he did a hunk about, oh man, I'm getting older. 40.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Now I see comics say it at 30. You know, it's like, but I talk about it. Yeah, I talk about erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, I try not to talk about that getting older.
Yeah,
you know, because then you set it in their mind. You go, oh yeah, he's getting older. Unless right. unless it's a group of people that are your age. Like sometimes I'm always trying to get younger audiences. You know, and I'll be behind the curtain before the show, and I'll look out. And it's all gray-haired people, out of shape, wheelchairs.
Right.
And I start thinking, oh, my God, they're so old. And then I realize I'm older than they are.
Yeah, but you're not. You never will be. That's the thing about doing stand-up. You just don't age. We're like Peter Pan. We're just kids.
Can you imagine being around other people where you were just, you know, retired from a corporate job you had, no stories about being on the road, right? I mean, you can never do that, and you do keep yourself young, I think, by staying engaged with going to these clubs or these younger comedians and watching them and see how they work and just talking with them.
Right,
it keeps you young.
Yeah,
and your kids are too old now to keep you young.
Oh, I know. I know. They're like, when I see them now, I realize I don't have, when they were young, I had a lot to offer them. And now your son's at the transition period where there's going to be a year or two from now where you go like, he's not going to listen to anything I do in terms of directing them. They're not open to it anymore. And they shouldn't be. They get to a certain age and they really have to go, I don't want to be told what to do. I want to pick my path.
Yeah.
I want to feel empowered to pick my path.
Yeah.
And that's where my kids are at now.
Oh, he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he respects what we say and he considers it, but he's still... You know, or he'll give us the opportunity. I mean, he's a lot more advanced than I was at his age.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good debater because they have debate class at school. And
well, you were a good masturbator, I think, when you were young.
In my freshman year.
Right.
Yeah. But as I got older, someone else won the title. And that's where I lost my virginity.
They were masturbating you. Oh, yeah. That was what the title was.
It can't
was.
Be called masturbating if somebody else is doing it. So anyway, yeah, I get it. I get the whole kid thing.
Yeah.
And I see it coming. I see it coming.
Right, right.
A friend of mine said, when my son was younger, he goes, you know, when they turn 15, you're not their best buddy anymore. They'd rather be with their friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. So, what's nice is I play golf with my son and I play paddle tennis with him. I think sports is a great way for fathers. And do you guys play sports at all?
Not too much. I was just thinking the other day, I thought, man, we never had a house that had a flat driveway to put a basketball hoop in.
Right.
You know, I throw the ball around with him. I used to practice soccer with him because he's really good. He's like a really good athlete, but he's so caring. Uh-huh. He started playing the Little League, you know, semi-softball, and he was the pitcher. He was the best pitcher on the team. He pitched all the time. He got good hits. And he stopped playing for two reasons. One, he didn't want to disappoint the coach or the parents that were watching if he made a mistake.
Yeah.
The other reason he stopped playing was because it was time to step up to the next league, pony league or whatever, where they used a really hard ball, all hard. And we're watching from the dugout these kids that are 10 or whatever, 11, pitching like they're pros, but they have no accuracy.
Yeah,
and they're wild, and batter after batter are getting hit, and they're carrying them off the field. And my son looks at me and goes, I don't think I want to play this game anymore. I said, I don't blame you, buddy. Let's go. But we do play ping pong a lot.
About golf? You golf?
I golf a little bit, but he never wanted to golf until recently when his friend started golfing.
Yeah.
He goes, Dad, I think I want to golf.
Yeah.
You know, he calls me Kev.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
Really?
I said, can you just call me Dad? It's something about Dad. He doesn't want to call me Dad. I said, I kind of earned that title.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It makes me feel so good when you say Dad or Daddy.
Yeah.
And so he stopped using the Kev, and now he calls me Father.
I like that.
He thinks I'm a priest.
But I think you should get into golf with him because that's something you can do for the rest of your life.
No, that's on our... It's on our bucket list. He, as soon as he gets time, he's so studious. It's like he comes
home.
He's
a senior in high school?
Yeah. But we want to go to the driving range and hit some balls. I think he needs to take lessons, you know.
Do you think you can give him lessons?
No. First of all, my wife or my son will not take lessons from me or take my advice.
Yeah.
You know, if I, let's say my wife is going to therapy and I'll say, hon, you know, maybe if we didn't do this, and we thought about that, whatever. She goes, no. And then she goes to the therapist. The therapist goes, maybe you should do this. And then she goes, oh, that's a good idea. What'd I just say? What'd I say? Or, you know, if I'm trying to show them how to golf, the stance is no. But if I hire a teacher, he'll listen to me, to them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just the family dynamics, I guess.
We went to a couple therapists when we turned 40. Just because we've been married 25 years, and I really am like blessed with the best woman I could ever imagine as my wife.
You've been married now 25 years?
25 years. And like she just came to Vegas for the weekend, and it was like we were in love.
You were working in Vegas?
Yeah.
Where?
Brad Garrett's club.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Brad?
That's a beautiful, I know Brad. God. Brad and I, here's the craziest story. I think he put it in his book. For some reason, we were working together. I don't know if we were co-headlining somewhere in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And you fly in, and the first thing you do then is you go to the club. And you check in with the club. And we go into the reception where the girl's working behind the desk. And we're there like at 3 in the afternoon. And we walk in there, and she goes, oh, are you guys from the AC company, air conditioning units? I said, yeah. Show us where the problem is. Without a beat. We start tearing down the tiles on the wall. We're standing on her desk. We're saying, this is not going to be, we're going to need 3 days on this. No, we have a show tonight. Really, who's playing? Brad Gursky and Kevin Nelson? Never heard of them. Bobby, get me my ratchet wrench. Let's take this duck out of here. And there's, you know, asbestos falling down. So Brad and I, we go way back.
Oh,
he's so
great.
Funny.
That's great.
Does a great Jackie Gleason.
Oh, he does a great Jackie Gleason. Yeah.
He's like the modern day Don Rickles.
Well, that's what his act is. Yeah, he was on the shows with me this week.
He
would MC the show. And he would go out, he would say shit to people. He would talk to a black guy and he would do like a 70s kind of shuck and jive black guy voice. It was crazy. There's a Latino guy in the front and his jeans are ripped and he goes, "Where'd you get that from climbing over the fence?" I mean, he goes hard and he gets away with it because he's so fucking charming. And
I know. There's a lot of comics like that are charming and they get away with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Dom still gets away with crazy shit.
Dom does?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's really out there. But also people like, you know, Anthony Jeselnik.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff he gets away with.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And someone like Chappelle.
Yep.
Gets away with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, if you or I did something like that, we'd be canceled.
It's just, and you can't force that. You either have that ability to get that across or you don't. And if you don't, it's like, I think somebody once said, well, why is it when one person says something, it's offensive, and when somebody else does, it's fine? And they said, because it's funny.
They make it funny.
You can't quantify that. You just got to say, are people laughing at it? Then it worked.
Does your wife come to see you perform?
Very rarely.
Yeah. When she was in Vegas, she didn't come to the show.
She came to one show.
Okay.
Just to see Brad, really.
And then she left.
No, she stuck around for me, but, you know, I do a St. Patrick's Day show. You've done my St. Patrick's Day show.
Yeah.
I do it every year, and she comes to that because that's the one. Anytime people in LA go, I want to come out and see you, they always think like that I'm just starting out and I need to fill the club.
Yeah.
And I never want anybody to come see me because I don't want to worry about putting them on the guest list and then I'm about to go on and I get a text that we're not on the list. Or
my biggest pet peeve is that. When I was on SNL, I'm supposed to be working on my lines. And,
right.
You know, extensions, and hey, we're down in the lobby. They don't seem to have our name.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. You know, and then you do that. And then they want to go to the party afterwards, the after party. And that's the last thing I want to do.
No.
You know, I want to go home and so I can have Sunday off for myself.
Yeah.
But they want to go and sit at a table like this and we order drinks and they charge us for the drinks and they just gawking at everybody.
Yeah.
Introduce me to so-and-so. Yeah. You know? So, so my wife and kid, they don't like to come to my shows because they get really nervous.
They do.
Because they love me so much.
Yeah.
And they don't want me to do poorly.
Uh-huh.
And my wife came to a show once at the Comedy Magic Club when she was pregnant. Hormones were on fire. And I got on and some guy walked by her and goes, "This guy's not funny."
No.
And to this day, it's traumatized her.
Oh, my
God. So
she
doesn't want to have that happen again.
Yeah.
I said, "Baby, that happens all the time."
With you, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, totally, man. So anyway, so my son doesn't come. And also they think I might say something that'll get me canceled.
Yeah.
I'm like the last guy to say something to get canceled.
That's not true.
You're right.
I mean, I've seen you say things to audience members that are kind of edgy.
Yeah, but I get away with it. Why?
Because it's funny.
Charming.
Yep. But so I have everybody come once a year to the St. Patrick's Day show, and that's it. I get it all out of the way one night, and that's the one my wife comes to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you get hammered on? No, you're an alcoholic, right?
Yes. Yeah, I stopped drinking.
Did you go to the program?
A little bit.
So you're kind of an alcoholic.
Well, I only drank one night in 35 years.
And what happened?
It was Kevin Meaney's funeral, and he was one of my best friends in the world.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I spoke at it, and then everybody was drinking. All these comics and his family and, you know, his daughter is my goddaughter, and everybody was just shit-faced. And I was back at my sister's house, and she had me sleeping in her bonus room, which has a bar in it.
That's
a
bonus.
And I started guzzling scotch.
Oh my
Chivas
God.
Regal.
Ooh wee. I can't even put scotch in my mouth. It's so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Kevin Meaney. You know, he had that big closer.
Yeah. We are the world.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, historically one of the most consistent kill bits of all time.
He'd still be doing that today.
Yeah.
You know, if he were alive.
Yeah.
But you knew him well, huh?
Well, we grew up one town away from each other in New York.
Oh, no,
New York. But then we both did comedy in Boston. And then he was very big. By the time I started comedy, he had just gotten big. And then my father knew him when he was a waiter. He was a waiter at a golf course that my dad belonged to in White Plains, New York. And so Kevin wanted to be a comedian. My father got him on stage. He was friends with the owner of Catch a Rising Star. Rick Newman.
Rick Newman, yeah.
So he got him into Catch Rising Star his first time. And so my father told me to look him up if I ever saw him, because I started doing it in college. And then he just like mentored me, and then that turned into a friendship, and that turned into like he was in my wedding party, I was in his wedding party, and we talked on the phone just constantly.
How long was he married?
Probably 10, 12 years, and then she found out he was gay. And that, I think that worked against the marriage.
Wait a minute. She found out he was gay. He didn't tell her.
No. Well, he was on Broadway at the time, dressed as a woman.
Well, that's, yeah, I could see at that time someone like Kevin Meaney who's, you know, you just don't, it's not a stereotypical gay person. You know?
No.
Can we say that?
What?
Nothing.
I think you're going to get canceled for that. No, I think he was raised very Irish Catholic, and I think he was afraid of how his parents would take it, which when he finally came out at 50, like, they were totally fine with it.
Yeah, because he had the kids. He had been married to a woman.
Yeah. And guess who he married? My next door neighbor, who used to be my babysitter.
No.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
What did she charge an hour?
Now, when she babysits me, it's like 150.
She still babysits?
We call it babysitting, but it's just
it's just to keep you company?
It's an hourly wage. Yeah.
Your kids are in their 30s. Is that right? How old are your kids? 25, 24?
Stop it. 21 and 24. And they're going to perform at my St. Patrick's Day party this year.
They're comedians?
No, they're going to play music. They both play guitar, and my daughter plays the flute, and they're going to play Irish traditional music.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm going to play some harmonica.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
You'll all be drinking.
They will be.
Have you been to Ireland lately?
Yeah, last summer.
I was there around then, too. I was there. Paul Reiser was shooting a movie that he wrote over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just hung out with him for a while.
Were you in the movie?
No.
Why didn't he put you in the movie?
Because he had already written it and was already shooting it. I just came out to do some fundraiser game show up there. And
Dublin?
Yeah, Dublin.
Nice.
Can you do an Irish accent?
Ah, yeah. What county do you want me to be talking
about?
One
that's not the Fruit Loop or whatever it is. Lucky that was the guy. No, the Irish bird, you know, the toucan.
Yeah. Well, down in Cork, they sound like, well, what about you, boy? What are you doing then?
Yeah, it's always there.
Yeah,
Where are you there?
Yeah, where are you there?
Yeah.
But I like instead of saying, how are you, what about you?
Is that what they say?
Yeah.
What about you?
What about you?
I want to learn a dialect.
Yeah.
And I should learn Irish, I guess, because I'm from Ireland. My parents are, or my ancestors are. I have my Irish passport, by the way.
I know that. We talked about that last time you were on the show.
And I'm still waiting for an offer from you to buy it.
Well, I'm going to get my own. My grandparents are from Ireland also.
What are you waiting for?
I got the paperwork. I just need to send it in. My wife's got it. She's got both.
Can you stay in Ireland if she just has a passport? You can stay with her as long as you want.
Yeah.
Really? So my wife can do that too.
Right.
Kid. Okay.
But when you talk about dialects, what's funny is that if you do Irish, Haley, you can even blow it up and be silly.
Yeah.
Italian, that's a matter for you, huh? Can't do Chinese. Why can't you do Chinese?
Because they never yell. It's always very, I don't even
want to do it. Just do it.
Shisha, bukirchi. What you want?
That's Italian.
No, that's Chinese, and I'll tell you why. I dated a Chinese girl for 6 months, and she taught me that. So those are real words there. Well, I need. Bukirchi.
Shisha. Does that mean leave the house?
No, it means get off of me. Or you'll be canceled.
You can't do Chinese. What else can't you do?
Why can't you do Chinese?
I don't know. I think it's the only race you can't do. I mean, you can do, you know, hey, what are we doing now, man?
No, you can't do the Mexican.
No?
No. You can't try to, unless you do it spot on. Otherwise, you're making fun of it. It's got to be perfect.
Right.
Right?
I could do Cuban. Like, we can all do Cuban because of Tony Montana.
Yeah, but he got canceled.
He did get canceled.
Yeah, for doing that.
Right.
By the NRA and also by the Cuban ministry.
That's right.
Yeah. But, yeah.
All right, let me get to fastballs with Fitz before you get out of here.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm always ready.
Okay. Oh, you know what I'm going to ask you? Who's Trish Morris? You were campaigning for her for something on your Instagram Twitter, and I couldn't figure out who the hell she was.
I wasn't campaigning for her.
She was running for something?
No. She was entered a game show kind of a thing online, and she wanted me to post it that she needs votes.
Who is she?
She's a woman I met. I do some... A friend of mine is Reggie Bibbs, and
he... The football player?
No. He's a buddy of mine who has neurofibromatosis. You know what that is? Big tumors, eye sinks down.
Oh, I think I saw a picture of him. He's a black guy?
Yeah. So she was working with him, helping him through some stuff. And we did a fundraiser for him. And so she is within that camp. So she saw how great we did a fundraiser for Reggie Bibbs. So I guess she was doing some kind of a game thing that she wanted me to get her name out there and vote for her. What's your next question?
Great story. I feel like we started really strong on this.
Well, I'm not finished. If I could finish the story, maybe you'd be serious that it was great.
You know what my favorite thing is you ever did? I saw you in Vegas, and we were at the baggage carousel, and we were both coming in different flights, going to different gigs, but we saw each other at the baggage carousel. And I said, hey, man, and we said hello, and then we're talking. In the middle of talking, you were drinking. You had a cup with a straw in it of soda, and you finished it, and then you just flipped it up, and all these people notice you, and they're all looking, and you just flipped it up on the ground, and you just kept on talking, and it landed on the ground, and you just ignored it.
Oh, man, that's my luggage rack humor right there.
You got to have a bit for the luggage carousel. Yeah. All right, have you ever played guitar on stage? I know you play guitar.
But
during
banjo
your comedy?
And the guitar. When I first started off, I had a guitar, and I would do a song called Surfing in Malibu.
Uh-huh.
I go, surfing in Malibu, surfing in Malibu. And then I take a glass of water and throw it on the guitar. And then later I write it. It was all gong show kind of comedy. Later I'd come out and say, here's a little song I wrote while I was up in Alaska. Surfing in Alaska, surfing. And I take a ice cube, a couple of ice cubes and throw it on the... I kept that guitar with me. Eventually the neck warped. It looked like a bow and arrow.
And you had to give up the bit?
I did do a banjo bit that I like lately, recently. I haven't done it in a while, but I talk about how I know how to play the banjo, and I've been playing since I was 18.
Yeah.
And but I only played in my room. I never played with other people. And even in my room, my parents would say, it's too loud. You know, they hate the banjo because it's so annoying to everybody. So I would have to play really softly, you know, like really soft. And so, but now I'm out performing, and would you like to hear a song? And it's really soft. I start stopping my foot. You know,
that's good. All right, here's the fast. Those were just random questions. Here is the fast. Who is your best male friend?
Best male friend?
Yeah. I think maybe it used to be Gary Shandling, probably, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, he was a good friend. I don't really have a best one. I haven't taken the survey of that top 50 of my best friends. But there's a couple. There's a couple, a writer friend of mine who I started off doing stand-up comedy with. My favorite joke of his was this.
Tell me his name.
Dave Merkin.
Yeah.
Another, his joke
was this. I've heard of this guy.
Yeah.
Merkin. Yeah, because I remember the name Merkin.
Yeah, so he's been a writer on The Simpsons for years.
Yeah.
So his joke is this. Is it just me or is everyone called? Is it just me or has everyone woken up this morning coughing blood?
What about Kirk Fox? Is
Kirk
he
Fox?
Up there?
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. Mike Brown lives out in Camarillo. Was just a normal guy, friend of mine. He helped,
right.
We wrote jokes together. Got me on the Tonight Show for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
But you know what? I am really my best friend.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We can cut that, right?
Yeah.
Who's the worst feature act or opening act that's gone on ahead of you? Like you go to a town. They've got the local. Do you bring a feature on the road?
Sometimes.
But if you don't, let's say,
if
and
I
they
don't.
Give you somebody, who was the worst? And not their name, just describe them.
The worst for me is somebody who does maybe five or six of the areas I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
Or they talk to the crowd and just burn them out.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Right. So you're not going to name someone specific.
I don't remember their names.
Well, I don't know if this is like a story. A lot of times people have a story about a guy who... Lit a firecracker out of his ass, and
I will tell you this: I was in a working in Bridgeport, my hometown.
The Stress Factory.
Yeah. And it was a Saturday, and I just finished the first show. And I go back into the green room, and all of a sudden I hear a stampede of people running by and screaming. And I come out and go, what's going on? And this woman's getting trampled. She's on the ground, you know, she's getting trampled. I said, what's going on? And I thought, Chappelle's next door. No, it was a guy goes, active shooter in the room. I'm like, what?
No.
Active shooter. So people panicked. The room afterwards looked like the Titanic. The tables are flipped over. There's broken glass everywhere. It was really crazy.
Really?
So I don't even think that's true. So I'm just walking out. You know, they're all running, and I'm not panicked at all. And I thought, well, just to be on the safe side, there's a big garage parking structure next in the back.
Yeah.
I go down the ramp, and there's a big metal dumpster there. So I go around behind the dumpster, and the bartender's back there. You know, she's about to crawl into the dumpster with all the garbage. I said, don't go yet. Well, let's wait a little bit. Otherwise, you got to shower afterwards and all that. But it turned out to be, it was just the guy across the street on the other side. He was outside shooting off a gun with his buddy. I don't know what they were doing. But, you know, people are on such edge. Somebody in the club goes, active shooter.
Yeah.
Because you heard the pop, pop, pop.
Yeah.
You know?
That happened to me once. I was in Brooklyn. And I was getting off the subway, and somebody thought there was a shooter. I think there was, maybe. 1,000 people started running for the stairs at the same time, and people literally were getting trampled. People were slamming into each other. People were punching each other, and you couldn't move. Like, it wasn't moving. And the screaming was crazy. And it went on. It took me 10 minutes to get up to the street from the bottom of the stairs.
That's worse than yelling fire in a theater.
Right.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, Bridgeport's become a very tough town. I don't know how it was when you grew up.
No, it was really tough when I was there. And then it got really nice. They cleaned it up.
I know, and then it got bad again.
Is it bad again?
It's bad. Are you kidding me?
Is it that bad?
You're kidding, right?
No.
Bridgeport is one of the worst cities I've been in 10 years.
I was there, 10 months ago. It looked clean. I thought, this is much better than when I was here. Maybe it's the people.
Are you kidding?
Bad!
Did I really do that?
Are riveting questions, by the way, so far.
All right, this one's going to be better. Have you ever not finished a set on stage?
Yes. Not that often, though. I was working at Caesars up in Lake Tahoe. I was opening up for the Pointer Sisters.
Nice.
And it's New Year's Eve. They added a show. And the stage manager, the guy's running the show, goes, do exactly what you've been doing since you've been here. Do 8 minutes and then wrap it up.
Yeah. You
know, just do 8 minutes. I said, okay. New Year's Eve, I didn't know that half of the, or they were all like $20,000 and over losers at the machines. And also half of them didn't speak English. And they gave
they speak Asian?
They gave every single one of them a noisemaker. No. I didn't know that. So I'm on for maybe 3 minutes. And I hear, hur. And then before you know it, it sounded like a flock of geese flying through the room. Everybody's, hur, hur.
Oh my
and
God.
After maybe 6 minutes, I say, you guys are great. You're going to love the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. Happy New Year. Yeah. And I left, and I got behind the curtain. Usually the Pointer Sisters are always, they're ready to go. They're on their little platforms with their platform shoes. And when I came back, they go, hey, Kim, you know, I couldn't see them. I just heard the voice. Hey, ma'am. It's all dark back there. And then, now I'm finished early, and they heard that I'm finished, and they come running down their little steps with their platform shoes. What happened?
Yeah.
I said, nothing. It's a great crowd. You're going to love them.
Yeah.
And the stage manager, he's pulling the curtains and stuff, music. He goes, you put me in a world of trouble. Sorry, man. You put me in the world of trouble.
You handed out noisemakers. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's crazy.
So that I did not finish that set. But I can't think of another time I did not finish a set.
Mm.
How about you?
Yeah, I was doing, I was opening up. It was another thing where it's always when you're opening for somebody big because they're not there to see you. And I was, it was at Kent State University, and it was a daytime, one of those daytime college parties where they've got kegs all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's shit-faced by 3 o'clock, and now it's like 5 o'clock. And outdoor stage, and I'm opening for They Might Be Giants, you know them?
Yeah.
And so I go
Turns out they were giants.
I was a little person and they were a giant. And I walk out on stage and nobody's even near the stage. I'm just performing for nobody. And then the people started to collect a little bit. And then this person was heckling me. And so, you know, I kind of shit on him.
Yeah.
30 seconds later, I get hit in the chest with an apple.
No.
And I just instantly went, thanks very much. You guys, you know, I mean, that's my line. I mean, if I get hit by something and there's no security, there's nobody working the gig.
Right.
And so I just said, have a great day, everybody. And I just walked off stage.
Yeah. I had a bottle thrown at me in Tulsa once from the stage, from the manager of the club. The lights went out for a second. And he threw a bottle up on the stage. It's because he's a wise guy.
Really?
Thought it'd be funny. But I'll tell you the other time that I did not finish my set. I was just starting out. They had an open mic night at this deli out in the valley called the Deli Smoker.
Yeah.
And it had sawdust on the floor and booths. It was not set up for a show at all.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be a booth where people weren't even facing you. And you come out there, the mic stand is in a little closet. You take it out. There's a little, about the size of this table stage, about maybe that high.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe a little light on you. And then there could be like three people in the booth. They don't even know there's going to be a show going on.
Yeah.
And they're eating their corned beef sandwich. And you start the show. And they're not even facing you. Like, you're over there and they're like, you know. And one night I was there's just one booth. And they got up and left. So nobody was in the room. Just me and the sawdust.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think that used to happen at Dangerfield. I don't know if you ever used to work Dangerfields. No. I never did. But my understanding was they would do a show during from 7 o'clock until 2 a.m. and they would have 5 comedians and you would do 15 minutes and then you had an hour and you had an hour off and then you went back up again and it was just a circle and they didn't do good business. And so sometimes if it was your 15 minutes and there was nobody in the audience, you had to stay on stage and you had to keep talking because if a couple came in, they wanted a show to be going on.
It's like an Apple store. When the guys are teaching you the Apple stuff, and nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, right.
And they're talking like you're riveted to the screen, you know?
Yeah. All right, final question. What's the hackiest bit you've ever done? Including the throwing ice at a guitar.
The hackiest bit?
Yeah.
It's hard.
Pretty deep catalog
to go through.
It's hard
to think.
Yeah.
The hackiest thing I've ever done. You would have to tell me that.
Oh,
you
come
see me
on.
Do hacky stuff. I can't really think of anything hacky.
Okay.
When I first started, it was
hacky stuff.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. My first jokes were like, I live in a really small apartment. It's over a telephone booth. Or, I live in, there's a lot of like bad people in my neighborhood, but they're kind of nice in a way. Like I came home and somebody stole all my tires. It was like on 4 cinder blocks. My car was on 4 cinder blocks, no wheels. I went into the trunk to get my spare tire, gone, but there's a spare cinder block. Spinner block right there.
That's not hacky. That's funny. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't have asked you that question because you're just genuinely not a hack. But you will be coming on stage. First of all, watch Hiking with Kevin Nealon.
YouTube. Thank you. Yeah.
The book is called I Exaggerate, which you came on and promoted last time you were on. And it's caricatures that you've done that is, it's world class. It's as good as any caricatures I've ever seen. And they're people that I care deeply about. It's people, comedians and actors and
caricatures of them, yeah.
Caricatures of them.
And on the
really
opposite
amazing.
Page, a little anecdote about my experience with that person.
Right.
Or if I didn't know them like Freddie...
Mercury.
It'd be musing about going to concerts.
Right.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah, it's great. Tour dates coming up. Boca Raton, Florida, February 25th and 26th. Sumterville, February 27th. Tampa, is that Side Splitters?
I don't know.
March 28th through the 31st. I think it's Side Splitters.
Maybe.
Just top three clubs in the country as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
Key West on March 2nd. Hermosa, March 6th. San Antonio, Batavia, Illinois. Steamboat, Colorado. Beaver Creek.
No.
Basalt. Boulder.
No, stop.
No. Wait
stop.
Till you get to this. Rochester. Naples, Buffalo. It goes on and on. KevinNealon.com. Get yourself some tickets. Come out and see... Somebody who I consider to be one of the best people in the country doing stand-up comedy right now.
And one other thing you're missing. One other thing you're missing.
Yeah.
We just, myself, executive producer with my wife and a bunch of other people, Brandi Carlile, Sarah Bareilles, Glennon Doyle. We are all executive, Tig Notaro, executive producers on a documentary. Oh my God, I'm losing it, man. Documentary.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's called Come See Me in the Good Light. It's about this couple, these two women that are in love, and they're both poets. One of them is a poet laureate, and she's been found out that she has incurable cancer. So stage four. So it's about living in the moment, and it's got a lot of humor in it too, unexpectedly. And it won best favorite film at the Sundance a couple weeks ago.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so we're excited about that.
Dude, that's amazing.
High five. Not that high.
Tig in it?
Tig Notaro is the producer. No, she's in it briefly, just introducing.
Who are the main characters?
Andrea Gibson.
Yeah.
And Megan Fally.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's so cool.
Anyway, where can people see it? Well, they're getting a distributor for it.
Okay.
Now,
so now you definitely will get a distribution deal because of the award.
It seems likely.
Wow.
But you never know.
You going to make some money off of this?
Not likely.
No.
Probably.
Did you put money in?
Yeah. That's why we're EPs.
Yeah.
We're just investors. But it was really creative the way we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did it. We wired the money. See, that's the creative input we had on that film.
All right, go see it. Kevin, thank you for your final appearance on Fitzdog Radio.
For now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Craig.
Thank you.
Is it Craig or Greg?
Fitzsimmons. Just say Fitzsimmons.
Fitzy.
Yeah, Fitzy.
Fitz.
Fitzdog.
All right, man.
Angel Reese y McDonald's tienen la clave para un post-game meal de campeones. Una QPC con salsa barbecue y tocino, papitas y un refresco. Los pros le llaman el Angel Reese Special. Llévate el Angel Reese Special solo en McDonald's.
Pa-da-pa-pa-pa.
En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.